evening, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Trinity Tims, but quadruple tonight because we're joined by Boycey from the Boycey Bus. So welcome aboard for tonight, Boycey. Boycey joins us on occasion. He always has a good bit to add in to our discussions, so he's on for tonight. And we've got a lot to get through tonight. As usual, I'm joined by Joe McHugh from Video Cells and James Forrest from the Celtic blog. And of course, you all know me as Eric Knott from Read Celtic. So, as I said, we've quite an agenda to get through tonight. There's a plenty to talk about. A lot happening over the last week at Celtic. Not all of it good, but there was one cheek or bit of light at the end of the tunnel, which was Saturday afternoon's performance against Dundee United, which, to be fair, was excellent. You couldn't say anything, you couldn't fault it, really. It was fluid, fast, attacking football, with the added bonus of a defence. We had one scare in the game, all right, when there was a bit of a mess up with the pass back, which Liam Scales ably defended and kind of got us out of the woods there. But overall, I think a very good performance under Martin O'Neill. Pretty much more of the same of what we had seen when in his previous stint back in November into December. So, yeah, it was a very, very good performance. I had said the previous week when we talked about our predictions for the performance that we'd be looking for a statement result. We got that, 4-0. Could have been more the way we played. And as I said to a couple of my mates at the game at the Celtic Sports Club that I go to, if we had a prolific striker, that game would have been out of sight at halftime. But that's not to take away from the guys in the way that they performed. And I mean, Yang, man of the match, that guy has come on leaps and bounds. And a fantastic performance again from Arnie Ingles. To a man, I think all of the team performed well. Even Kasper Schmeichel, who's been having a bad run of it lately, performed quite well. His distribution was quite good. So across the board, really, really good. It's the only positive, though, that we can realistically take out of a week that has been, you know, in the overall 7 days of that week, that has been pretty shambolic. The one thing that we can be confident in is that Martin O'Neill will definitely get results with this team. But he does 100% need that those recruits in to augment that side. He definitely needs a striker. No two ways about it. He has this evening, there's breaking news in that he admitted that the reason that he called Stephen Welch in was because of the inactivity, transfer inactivity is how he put it. So he's clearly not impressed with what's going on at the club at the moment in terms of transfer inactivity, because it's not activity, there's inactivity. So we'll touch on that a bit later on. But first of all, we'll touch on the game. So to start with, I will go to Joe and get Joe's opinion on the game. How did you feel we performed on Saturday, Joe?
It was a good performance, but I wouldn't get carried away with it. It was just back to playing normal football. You watched the team, and from the first couple of minutes, you saw four guys across the back and trusted someone in line with them to pass the ball to. And you might get bored to death with that earlier on the season, but never get bored with it, because trusted to Scales isn't the worst thing in the world, because we saw that in the previous eight matches. So it was a decent, competent performance. I'm not glass half empty, but Dundee United are absolutely rank. I think they've got about three or four wins over the last 4 months. Unfortunately, one of them was against us under Wilfred Nancy, but the team played pretty well. They got their shape back. They looked organised. They played for 90 minutes. That's something that was never, ever apparent under Nancy. So it was decent and competent. You talked about the striker issue, the misses that Maeda had. Tunepke, he's worth a shout-out. He looked good doing his job on the left. He wasn't trying to overdo it. He wasn't auditioning for his next showreel. When he beat a man who was looking to pass it, he'd won great cutback to Hitati, and it was pretty frustrating how lazy and sloppy he was, leaning back well over the bar. But it was a pleasure to watch that match. I would have settled for 1-0 before the start, but as the goal started to go in, and it's great, Negren's got to be playing in every match at some stage, whether he starts or whether he comes on. But I think most folks, as soon as he came on the park, most folks said, we're going to get a goal here, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And he showed the composure that Hitati doesn't have. When he got that half chance, he kept his cool and slotted it away. So it was an impressive, it was a step forward. We're 2 weeks away from Tynecastle. Our podcast in 2 weeks' time will be a telltale podcast. So that's my verdict on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much echoes my sentiments on it, Joe, as well. How about you, Boise? What's your take on Saturday? Would you see a positive step in the right direction anyway in terms of the way we're playing again, or we're playing again, put it that way?
That just lined up sensibly as well for a start. I think the back four was essential to get back to that. And I think what you see with Martin O'Neill does is he gives people that extra percentage of confidence about them. I think you look at guys like Arne Engels and the ball and things like that. I mean, I think they just look far more comfortable with what they're doing, man. And I think a lot of it is psychological. And I think when you've got someone who can just give you the freedom to play, he can tell you you're better than maybe what you are or what you've played so far. He just seems to give everyone that little lift. And I do think tactically and stuff, that I think they followed a common sense approach so far. And it's not been to rip up the whole storybook and start fresh middle of a season, which was utterly bonkers. But to be fair to Wilfried Nancy, he's done exactly what he said on the tin and exactly what he would have said at the interview, what he was going to do. How they thought it was a good idea, I'll never know, particularly when Martin was already at the helm. It's just a pity when you're seeing performances like that. They're not to add gloss to a top-of-the-table position. They're actually to keep us in a title fight right now, and that is purely because we had those league games without Martin at the helm and Wilfried Nancy in charge. That has completely set us back. I do think when you contrast and compare it with his final game of his first interim spell, I think the players now strike me as looking like they've got what they wanted. I'm not condoning players not trying a leg and stuff for managers, but it was quite clear when you had Luke McCowan's comments that something's amiss here. There was other rumours about fallouts and stuff like that behind the scenes, which I suppose probably there is a chance of. It probably happens all the time anyway. But I do think the players looked like they were busting a gut. They've got the guy back that they never wanted to leave. And I thought the performance looked like there was a weight off the players' shoulders and a cloud had been lifted off them. But they've got it all to do going forward. It's a performance we should be expecting from them, because right now they've let themselves down this season. There's no two ways about that as well. You can blame managers all you want, but the players, whether it was under Rodgers or Nancy, have not been at the races enough. And if there was a bit of a spoilt brat attitude to not being happy with Nancy's tactics, who was, to be fair? But I think they've now got what they wanted, so they've got to now deliver on that as well. But albeit the early signs are that they are happier in their skin playing under this manager. They were far more comfortable on the pitch than what they have been for weeks or the past month. And lo may it continue, but Falkirk on Wednesday is another difficult and different type of hurdle to overcome. We'll really start to see whether there has been big change in their mindsets or not come then.
Yeah. John McGlynn always gives us a tough game. He's giving everybody a tough game this season. And to be fair to him, you know, he's punched way above his weight so far this season. A lot of people probably wouldn't have expected a team coming up from the Championship to perform as well as his, as he has 30 points on the board already. And he's outperforming some of the better managers in the, well, who would be like the likes of Stephen Robinson would be considered a better manager, you know. So he is definitely, it's a potential, or, you know, a potentially tough game on Wednesday night against Falkirk. And that will, as you say, Boise, be a test. So, James, we'll move on to you. What was your take on Saturday's performance? I take it, obviously, you were happy with what you saw, but there's work to be done. There's still plenty of work to be done, and this transfer window is crucial.
Well, I mean, I heard on the way back for the game that Martin had a go at one of the BBC reporters for suggesting that all he's done is put some round pegs in round holes. And I understood why Martin was pretty pissed at that assertion, because he's done a lot more. Obviously, he's done a lot more than that behind the scenes. But it actually comes down to something as simple as that the team looked more cohesive. It looked like it had a structure. You didn't have four or five players playing out of position, and you saw the difference it made. I mean, Wilfried Nancy is going to be remembered for what basically came down to an eight-game career suicide run, because this was the best opportunity the guy ever had in his career to build himself a reputation, and he annihilated it in eight games. And all he had to really do was take some advice and sit down and listen to O'Neill for longer than 15 minutes. And I remember thinking at the time when he commented that by this stage we're all professionals and we all know enough, you know, that it was self-confidence. But in fact, it was just arrogance, and it was misplaced arrogance at that. O'Neill kept it simple. O'Neill knows where the players all fit together. He knows how to put this team together. And that in itself was like watching the players run around the pitch as if a big weight had been lifted off their backs. Because, I mean, even when you know that the manager is responsible for playing players out of position, the players always get the blame. You know, if he's playing Stephen Welsh as a, if he's playing Liam Scales as a left-sided fullback, right, running up the wing, and he makes a mistake, you're going to blame him. You're not going to blame the manager for putting him out there. So players know this, and players get spooked by it, and that's why nobody wants to play in an unfamiliar position. And boys, he's right. O'Neill is really good at getting players that extra 1% confidence, but a lot of the confidence that you saw on Saturday was players just being familiar again in the roles that they're in and knowing what they're supposed to do and knowing that they've got the skill set to execute the plan. It was a Celtic performance. It was a Celtic team playing Celtic football. I was really pleased to see it. But all the old doubts were still there in one form or another. Yang had an excellent game, which comes on the back of an excellent game and an excellent game and an excellent game. And I don't know whether I'm quite ready to reevaluate him as a first-team level player. But I'll tell you what, it would be churlish to write him off as one. Right? And this is what I kind of believe, and we'll discuss it, I'm sure, in a minute. That we were intending to bring in the guy from Israel and then sell Yang, which is just fucking preposterous. That tells you everything about the mindset and the thinking and the psychology of our club. Is all over the place. But O'Neill brings back stability and he brings back some sense of order. And that in itself could get us to the league title. But I have my doubts that we'll do it unless we bring in some serious firepower. Because, once again, watching John Kenny is painful. It's hard to do. Because you so much want to see the guy succeed. And being a homegrown player, you would love nothing more than to think that we've got a possible star on our hands, but we don't, really. We don't. We just don't. It's not there, and it's hard to watch a guy right now. He feels like one of the players that needs to be sent somewhere on a long-term loan or whatever it is and told, look, let's be fair here. You've had a chance and you've not took it. It's a sin, but it is what it is. Can't be sentimental.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was the same, to be honest, on Saturday. I was like, just, you're kind of willing the guy to score, but it seems when he gets those clear-cut chances, he just doesn't seem to be able to put the ball away. Now, I know that chance that he had that was offside on Saturday, you know, still that one-on-one on the keeper, he should have just lifted that ball, and he just doesn't seem to have that instinct to lift it, you know what I mean, or to place it where it should be placed. So, yeah, look, I mean, definitely, that, as I said, having Martin O'Neill back is light at the end of the tunnel in terms of what's going on the field of play. And I suppose I want to go back to what Joe just touched on there and, you know, the game coming up in a fortnight against Hearts. And we can't avoid it any longer, guys. They were put up with a serious test yesterday at Dens Park against Dundee, you know. They were down to 10 men. And I watched the game from start to finish and I really thought their defending was very, very good. And that's against the farm, you know, a farm side at the moment. Dundee are in farm. They had won the last three of their games. They were a bit toothless up front. I did say that in our group chat during the game yesterday. But that save from Craig Gordon at the end was world class. I mean, that was the difference between them, 3 points and a point. And I think it's down to, I think what will be the difference in winning or losing this league will be a big part of it will be the two fixtures against them, home and away. Or away first and then home. And I take it if we play them at home, that'll be after the split, guys, yeah. So that could be a title decider. You never know by that stage, but it's going to be crucial that we beat them at Tynecastle in 2 weeks' time. And based on the resilience they showed yesterday, they're going to be no easy nut to crack. They're getting more and more cocky. They're getting more and more confident. And yesterday's performance showed all of that. And they're not afraid to bring the signature, you know, to get the signatures of players early in the transfer window. Themselves and the Ibrox side have been making a lot of moves in the transfer window as opposed to what we've been doing. But I'll go to you, Boise. Like, did you see the game yesterday or did you see any highlights of it? What was your opinion? I mean, they were definitely, you know, they showed character. They're the kind of results that when you grind out results like that, when you're down to 10 men and you grind out a result like that and win a game 1-0 and get 3 points when you're not expected to, they're the kind of results that win titles. And is it a case of they are slowly but surely getting into that form of a title challenging side, or a side that we have to start taking seriously as title challengers, serious title challengers now?
Yeah, no, I mean, I watched it the second half yesterday. I turned it on and then they got the red card, so I think that was just before halftime. And that kind of got my hopes up a wee bit. But yeah, the longer the game went on, the less likely you thought Dundee were going to score. Of course, there was that anomaly, which was the chance right at the end. Interesting things for Craig Gordon as he decides to wrestle between whether to go out on loan to ensure a World Cup spot or stay at Hearts with a chance to win a league with them, which is quite a mad situation. You might need to choose between one of them sort of potential opportunities, but that's not our problem. Our problem is Hearts as a team right now. And I think definitely when you're down to 10 men, you're only a goal up. That was a proper acid test yesterday in terms of winning. That's the sort of game when you win that 1-0 from our perspective, we all say, do you know what? That game goes a long way to winning titles. And you got that vibe off them. How they handle it as the kitchen gets hotter, shall we say, do you know what I mean? I'm not entirely sure. If you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen, as they say. And I'm not sure Hearts will have that experience and know-how throughout their team to get over the line. I still actually, bizarrely, and I can't even believe I'm saying, I make Celtic favourites to win the league still, to be honest with you. But will they be there or thereabouts come the final 2-3 games? I think so. I think they'll still be in with a shout. And Joe was absolutely right when he says, you know, I know you're referring to this podcast, but I think in a couple of weeks' time, it will have a huge bearing on how the season's going to pan out. And we'll certainly know the law of the land a wee bit more clearly. I think from our point of view, we need to take all opposition seriously right now, because when you actually look at the three or four teams around us, Motherwell beat us, Hearts beat us, Rangers beat us, and that's just the reality of that. Was just under Nancy. So, you know, we've got to take the competition around us as seriously as ever. And as Martin says, we need to supplement the squad to tackle it as well. It looks as well, just quickly on Hearts, they're going to be supplementing their squad. Rangers are already spending money that they don't have again. Or do have, who knows these days. And we're the ones with bona fide guaranteed cash reserves who haven't yet. So whilst I'm saying we need to take them seriously, they're taking their position seriously, the two teams that are around us particular. We haven't as of yet, and that's my real concern. But as for Hearts, I thought it was a ground out really good result for them, and it's a good omen for them if they are going to be in the title hunt.
Yeah, definitely. How about you, James? I mean, did you watch it? And if so, what was your opinion on the performance? Do you think would you kind of share Boise sentiments that is kind of title winning? Their title winning results are they the kind of results that you need to be grinding out if you're going to challenge for a title?
Well, that usually comes into a hindsight thing, right? We know that we can do this because we've done it time and time again. But the simple fact is that they are a Craig Gordon miracle save away from dropping points yesterday. And that's just the fact of it. That ball's going in the back of the net. That's a goal all the way until he pulls that off. And I mean, that's one of the best saves I've seen this season. It's one of the best saves I've seen in many years. It's exceptional the way Gordon gets to that ball. But other than that, I thought there was a very flat performance for Hearts. I thought that Dundee controlled much of the first half until Hearts scored the goal. I'm still not convinced. I am still not convinced Hearts can go the distance. I keep framing it around the idea that we should be out of this. We should be dead and buried here. If Hearts are half of what the media thinks they are, and the Ibrox club is half as good as the media thinks they are, we should be out of sight here. We should be done already. This should be over. But other than Nancy's brief period in charge, we would be the team out of sight right now.
Absolutely.
We would be sitting six clear of Hearts. We'd be sitting God knows how many clear of the club across the city. I mean, even in spite of our utterly disastrous managerial decision, we're still in this race. And that convinces me that if we can put together a good run of form between now and the end, we will win it. But the only way we're putting together a good run of form is if our players are not dead on their feet by the time we go into the split. Because this is not going to be won before the split. There's no way. The games after the split, those last five games in the run-in, they're going to be the critical ones. And I was thinking about this last night. Hearts have got a free ride. Hearts don't have to worry about European football any longer. As of the next Europa League game, the Ibrox club doesn't have to worry about European football anymore. They can play out their last matches with a reserve team and no one will care. But we need to take it seriously and we need to try and win those last remaining games. And we need to have one eye on the next round because I would hope that we would be there. But that's an awful lot of games to play with this threadbare squad. And on top of that, you're hoping for a good run in the Scottish Cup. And that's even more games to play. And with this squad, we're just not going to be able to do that. We're just not going to be able to. The fact that we're recalling Stephen Welsh to give us some much-needed backup that we've been screaming out for at central defence tells its own story. And Neil's right. If we get injuries in even a few key positions, we're done.
Yeah, we should be calling Mike Naraki back as well.
Yeah. I'm still not convinced that the Hearts title challenge would be even a thing if we were having a better season. But we absolutely could still lose this to one or the other team. We actually could still finish third. And that's no something that can be ruled out, absolutely. Yeah. And if we don't get this transfer window, there's a very real chance that we'll finish third. That might be the disaster that certain people in our support need.
Yeah.
And the certain people who are
That's the thing.
Not how I see it happen, but it could be the disaster that a lot of people require. Snap them out of a transfer.
But I guess I know you've kind of come up with all the permutations there, James, of what could and couldn't have happened, but these are the cards that we've been dealt, and this is what we have to deal with, you know. So we've got to negotiate it as best we can. So, Joe, you haven't been convinced by Hearts pretty much throughout the whole season. Are you starting to be convinced by them, or do you still think that the challenge will fade away?
I've been convinced of Hearts for a while, and it's because the other two teams are so poor. Hearts have been in course for about 80 points most of the season, and the other two clubs are now on course for that as well. So it's a three-way battle. All the clubs are heading for about 80 points. If somebody can get 85 or 86, that should give you the league by a couple of points. Previously, we had a base of around about 100. In a good season, we could get above 100. In a bad season, we're hitting about 95, 96. We're getting nowhere near that this season. So the league is very much three-way. Celtic's game in Bologna next midweek. If Celtic are serious about winning the league, they've got to give up in that game in Bologna. There's no way that Celtic can go full pelt against Bologna on a Thursday night and then come back to Tynecastle and win at Tynecastle. We know how limited the squad is. There's maybe about 12, 13 trusted players. Iheanacho may be back. If Iheanacho comes back and starts a match at Suicide, Iheanacho should be getting 20 minutes for three or four games, coming off the bench as an impact sub, and then hopefully that's him starting to make an impact and be ready. But Hearts are very much in the title race, and that's because our standards have fallen quite a bit. There's a few ifs from James there, but 20 matches is a fair stretch of the season. There's no blips, there's no little form bursts there. It's past the halfway stage, and I think Celtic take a draw at Tynecastle, because unless there's two or three signings coming in, unless Michael Nicholson's about to surprise us. But as things stand, if we're playing Hearts tomorrow night, or if we're playing them at the weekend, we're in a bad place, and there needs to be a lot of action done very quickly if we've to survive Bologna and win at Tynecastle. So, and then the Tynecastle one, it's followed by Utrecht at home, and then in the Europa League, and Falkirk at home on Sunday. And then I think it's Aberdeen away after that. So I think Aberdeen away is the 4th of February, post-transfer window. So we've got tons and tons of work to do. And although Aberdeen are ranked, they are capable of raising their game now and then. We found that out in the cup final. So
Aberdeen have a new manager by then, Joe, no?
Yeah. Boys, you said... we can take no game for granted. But we're quite good. Under Martin O'Neill, at home to Dundee United, Falkirk and Kilmarnock, we might win 4-0. But every game, there's a threat. There's a real prospect of losing points. As I said, Saturday was a rare 90-minute performance. But I don't think the squad we've got can go 90 minutes in Bologna and 90 minutes at Tynecastle. So there needs to be... Whoever we sign can't play in Bologna. Whoever we sign won't play against Utrecht. So we need signings in. They're not going to be playing against Falkirk. So our new signings have got a game against Auchinleck Talbot on Sunday on a plastic pitch at Kilmarnock before they go to Tynecastle. So Hearts are very much in it, and that's because we've lowered our standards.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, look, we're at a point where we just have to win every fixture. That's it. And I agree with you 100% on the Europa League games. They need to be put to the back burner. We need to focus on, you know, because if it's never been a truer statement that the league is your bread and butter. And right now it is our bread and butter. We have to win the league in order to continue any sort of a challenge we want to mount in Europe. Whether that be Champions League or Europa League next season, we just don't know what kind of shape we're going to be in for next season or who our manager is going to be. So we at least have to give ourselves a fighting chance to be able to compete in Europe. And that if that means sacrificing Europe for this season, then so be it, in order to give us or put us in that position for next season. So we'll move on. And the next subject on the agenda is, and I'm not going to sugarcoat this, what the fuck is going on in the transfer window? The first thing I would say, right, before I move to you guys, is I'm guessing that people are seeing Michael Nicholson's number coming up on their phone and going, nah, fuck that, not answering that. So this is the kind of reputation that the guy has built for himself, and people do not want to deal with him. So this is why I'd say we're at a point in this transfer window where people just do not want to deal with Michael Nicholson. And there's a story doing the rounds at the moment that Michael Nicholson bypassed the Birmingham City officials, or, you know, owners, whatever the case may be, the board, to contact Kyogo Furuhashi directly. And basically, Furuhashi was under the impression that the club knew about this move that he had planned, and that Nicholson was so cocky that he was going to get Kyogo Furuhashi up across the border back to Glasgow Celtic, that he briefed the media on it. He was that cocky that he was going to get it. But immediately, I think the story is that when Birmingham City found out that he had bypassed them, they just shut it down, completely shut it down. And I think this stems from his dealings with them last summer, when he refused to answer the phone to them when they were trying to wrap up the situation or the deal with Hyun Jung Yang. And the situation there was he was trying to get Tunekli wrapped up, and he didn't get it wrapped up in time and had to recall Yang. And having to recall Yang, he basically then wouldn't answer the phone to Birmingham, you know, because to tell them that he wasn't selling Yang. And the whole thing was shambolic. It was absolutely shambolic. And what has happened now is he's gone to try and replace Kyogo Furuhashi with Kyogo Furuhashi, and he's gone above or just skirted the Birmingham board completely and decided not to deal with them at all. And I mean, that again is just another facet of his utter incompetence. So we are now in a position where we're on the 12th of January. We do not have a striker. The move for Jocelyn Tabby has fallen in, or has, you know, it's gone, because they're saying they have their eye on other targets, which is bollocks as far as I'm concerned. They pulled the plug on Tabby because of the repercussions and the optics that were involved in that particular move, and we all know what that is. So the point of the matter is, like, that we have at this moment Julian Araujo on loan, and that's it. And we've nothing else tied up. And we've just recalled Stephen Welsh today because Martin O'Neill has said that the movement in the transfer window is stagnant. There's nothing happening. So that's why we're having to recall loan players in. So James, I'll go to you. It's a fucking shambles. And this is the most critical transfer window in years. And these guys are dragging their ass yet again. It defies belief, but it's actually fucking happening. So what is happening?
Well, I've got a piece going up at 8 o'clock tonight that attempts to answer that question, and only attempts to answer it, because we're all asking the same variation of the question. And there really isn't a logical answer that makes sense, except that I think these guys are so wedded to this way that the day hangs now that they, first, they don't know how to change it. And secondly, their credibility to an extent is tied up in maintaining it, even when it plainly is not working. Gamblers call it the sunk cost fallacy. If you've spent half your wages in the bookies and lost it all, the temptation is to spend the next half trying to win the first half back. because doing so means that you're basically saying, I fucked this up, and that money's gone, and I'm walking away while I still can. And I just think that that's what they're doing. I think that they're so used to doing things this way, and they're so invested in it, and their reputation is built on this prudence and all this bollocks, that they think it's better to just carry on straight ahead, pursue the failed strategy, than to admit that it was a failed strategy the whole time. And the only thing that's been holding this club together over the past X number of years have been two exceptional managers in the dugout. And some years have been arguing that for a long time, and some years were scared to death of what the summer was going to bring. For that exact reason. Because this is the way the club does things. And nobody at the club thinks that this is the wrong way to do things. They are all convinced that this idea works. They're convinced that this policy is the right one. And they will pursue it no matter who is in the dugout, no matter who it pisses off. The thing about Nancy, if you listen to some of the comments that have been made, was that they saw him as a guy who would adapt to fit the system. He wouldn't rock the boat. He wouldn't ask questions. I think they're wrong about that because he did at his previous club. But this was what Tisdale told the board. He is a better fit. He will buy into what we want to do. And it's just as simple as that. And it didn't matter that Rodgers didn't fit the system. I mean, that makes you wonder why they hired Rodgers in the first place. He didn't fit the system. But he didn't fit the system, obviously. And he was going to do it their way. O'Neill was making it abundantly clear. He's no stake in his reputation on these people. If these people let him down, he's going to call them out. And if they don't understand the consequences of that, then they soon will. But I just don't see that they talk about lessons being learned, right? But the only lesson that they seem to have learned is we need a guy in the dugout who's not going to argue with us and is just going to get on with it. That's what they mean when they say we've learned lessons. They don't mean we've learned that the policy's shit and we're changing the policy. They mean we need a yes man who'll execute the policy better. And we're in bad trouble, I think. We're 12 days into this and 19 days to go, and I don't have any optimism about it at all. Not one bit. And the fact that O'Neill's in the dugout makes no difference to these people at all. I think they're just as capable of throwing O'Neill to the wolves as they did Rodgers. But they're running the alibis in that regard. Every single thing that they said about the summer's chaos, they managed to blame on Rodgers. Every single thing. They will not get away with that strategy when it comes to O'Neill. They cannot blame O'Neill if the second half of this season is a disaster. But they will try. I have no doubt they will try.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on that. They will try.
And here's the other thing, right? Here's the bigger issue, right? And this is one I need to write. This is one I'm going to write about tomorrow. We have been fed a diet of utter BS about why this club won't spend money. And there are people who have been pushing the line that this is a FSR issue, right? And with all due respect to my friend Altied, when he was on here, he made the argument that FSR was the reason why we're not spending and that the board is right to be prudent and whatnot, right? Well, there's really only one answer that I can offer to that, except for the fact that it's been thoroughly dismantled online by smarter people with this stuff than me. Look across the city, a club that's run up structural debts year on year on year on year on year and have to be pretty close to the FSR line. So either they don't think the FSR is any big deal, they don't think that the sanctions are severe enough that they have to be concerned about it, or FSR is not the big bad wolf that our board will have you believe. One way or another, though, the Ibrox club doesn't give a shit. They'll happily skate up to the line and over the line if it wins them this title. And yep. For our board to pretend to us that FSR is some big steel cage that locks us in, I'm afraid it's a lie. It's a gigantic lie, and the club across the city are the ones who are exposing it as a lie.
Yeah. Boise, I'll put this one to you. Would you say at this point in time, because it's looking far, far, far beyond incompetence at this stage, is it sabotage? Are they sabotaging our season?
I don't know if it's sabotage. I think you're giving them a wee bit too much credit. You suggested, Eric, that Michael Nicholson was picking up the phone, and James suggested there was a policy and a system. I didn't know we were being so generous to them tonight. I think I'm on the wrong podcast. I don't know what's happened here. I don't think they've ever had a plan. I think you look at you mentioned earlier replacing Kyogo with Kyogo. I think that sums everything up. They didn't know why they were selling Kyogo other than it was the first bid that came their way. They didn't know who to replace Kyogo with. They had no plan for, like, after Kyogo. They went the January window not replacing him. They got to the summer window and decided to get rid of a 20-goal striker and still not replace Kyogo and not replace the 20-goal striker. They actually only got Iheanacho, if you remember, after the window shut. So those two windows bypassed with the two strikers we had sold in each of those windows and no striker Nicholas brought in. There is Nicholas no strategy.
40-goal contributions.
Yeah, of course. Of course, absolutely. There is no strategy. There is no plan. And Michael Nicholson, to me, looks absolutely too shit-feared to pick up a phone to anyone. I've got no faith that he's phoning other guys that are competent in what they do, that have been in football for years, listen to him nervously tremble at the other end of the line as he offer a couple of ginger bottles for a loan deal. Of course he's going to be too nervous to pick up the phone. I don't see any of that happening. I think right now what's happened is the non-strategy that's there is just being exposed now for what it is. And when you actually look at the window where we brought in the likes of Ingles and Ida, and you listen to all the MSM nonsense where they say, like, oh, how could you complain as a Celtic fan? We spent money then. No, that was a last-ditch, Larry, overpriced fees for those players, which, to be honest with you, they've never been... They actually hamstrung the players, if you know what I mean, because that was all that was associated with Ida, was 9 million quid, rather than looking at, do you know what, didn't have a great season, but still banged in 20 goals. Yeah. Tell you what we're doing with him now. Ingles, if he has a 7 out of 10, it's a 6 out of 10 because of his £11 million fee. So these fees actually detrimented the players as well. They don't have any vision. They don't have any idea of what they're doing. To say it's sabotage, we'd be giving them far too much credit, because it would allude to, again, that there's some form of plan here. They don't have one. They're out their depth in what they're doing. How Michael Nicholson could look in the mirror each morning and say, I think I'm the best guy to be the CEO of Celtic out there. And that's why today, Michael, is another day you don't resign. If he could say that in the mirror, he's lying. But there's other outliers there that are important for him in life, and that'll be securing his family's future, making sure he gets his bonus, hits the KPIs that are part of his job remit. But they don't involve Celtic-related things from a football perspective that we would look at. And there's no way he could possibly not have resigned if, at the forefront of all he's thinking, as they would peddle to you, is Celtic at heart. That's evidently can't be true. Otherwise, he would have done the noble thing and resigned. It's not about that. He's providing for his family. He is in the best paid job he'll ever have in his life, and he's going to remain in situ. It's not sabotage. It's just not a clue in what they're doing. Sorry, I'm going on a wee bit, man.
And self-preservation.
I think one of the guys asking the question is just asked an absolute beauty. If you were a bold apologist who was to make a case for Michael Nicholson, where would you even start?
Yeah. That's a very good question.
It's impossible.
It is, but it's like you touched on earlier there, Boyce, you said, when he gets up, how does he get up in the morning and how does he look in the mirror and say, you know, that he's the best possible CEO for Celtic? In that vein, do you not think then, and I'll put this to Joe, do you not think then that Wilfred Nancy was a true reflection of Michael Nicholson's ability as a CEO? And we're starting to run out of expletive deletives and terminology to say how bad these guys actually are. And if it's not incompetence, what follows incompetence, Joe? I'll put that one to you.
On Nancy and Nicholson, Nicholson is CEO in salary only. Paul Tisdale told him, here's your new manager. And Six months ago, Michael Nicholson wouldn't have been able to pick out Wilfred Nancy in an identity parade. Not got a clue about him. The notion that he's some insight into rising up-and-coming manager in MSL is just utter bonkers. And this up-and-coming young manager is 48 years of age. He finished seventh in the 15-team Eastern Conference, etc., etc. So, Nicholson, we can all give him a good slap and a good kicking, metaphorically, for the decisions that are on his watch. And I'll remind him of Matt Lowell, Paul Tidsdale, and Wilfred Nancy, should the clown still be around at the next AGM. But he does what he's told. He does what Big Peter tells him. He does what Big Peter would do. And if he needs any guidance, he'll give Big Peter a call. But what one issue on FSR, a complete and utter red herring. Every club in Europe will be sanctioned before UEFA get round to sanctioning Celtic. Celtic have got absolutely nothing to worry about on FSR. And inside that, a lot of people say, oh, look at the wage bill. The wage bill last season was ridiculous. Well, the wage bill last season included bonus payments for being in the Champions League. And I suspect they were pretty hefty payments made to players. So no need to worry about that this season. A year ago, we had 9 Champions League points. Just now, we've got 7 Europa League points. Mm-hmm. So, another thing is, Celtic don't give a breakdown on wages. They don't tell you what portion of wages is first team wages or even football wages. So that's a major element that reduces the percentage.
Was there not a stat that Celtic were the second lowest, I think, in the SPFL in terms of wages to turnover as a percentage? I'm sure second bottom. I'm sure of that. Someone could check that. Like, but I'm positive that's the truth. So, aye. Just very quickly on that FSR, it's just nonsense. Celtic are not the... What that is another example of them condescending you, patronising you, and doubting your intelligence as a football fan, that you don't know what you're looking at. You're an idiot. So listen to what we're feeding you. And I think, as you say, the examples that you can look at from across the city and at Hearts and stuff blows it absolutely out the water completely, that FSR could be. And I think, Joe, you've nailed it. Every single club in Europe, perhaps, could be investigated by that before it would ever come to Celtic. So for them to use that in a statement is actually just because they're looking at us four right now, the same way they're looking at the rest of the fan base. You're plonkers. You don't know what you're talking about. We're ITK. You're not. Sit down, shut up, and eat your soup.
Yeah, it's a case of feed a line to their favourite media messengers. They'll pass it on to the anti-establishment plebs and they'll all swallow it. But it's nonsense. And Eric, you were asking the question about Nicholson looking in the mirror. His achievement is the same as his mentor, Big Peter. Nicholson has saved Celtic from liquidation. That's his one and only achievement. And there are still a good number of happy clappers out there. They'll take that as some sort of achievement. We're into liquidation. It's pretty unusual. It doesn't happen very often. Most chief executives manage to avoid taking their company into liquidation, so it's no badge of honour. So, as Boyce said, there's no plan. They just sort of shuffle about. I think now they're back in touch with some favoured old agents like Dudu Dahan. Any dross that you can put our way, we'll try and spin it. Strikers that have scored 4 goals or 5 goals in the last year, playing in the second tier in France, playing in mediocre divisions for mediocre clubs. I'm reminded of Vakun Bayo and Marian Shved. They were signed in January 2019 and Brendan Rodgers left in February 2019. So expect more of the same. They haven't a clue. They've been guarded by the success and leadership and presence of Ange Postecoglou and Brendan Rodgers. Neither of them are here. I would like to see Martin O'Neill be firm on them. I don't think he will be. I think he'll see the season out. But if next Wednesday Celtic are heading off to Bologna and there's no striker on board, Martin O'Neill should be. I'm the word to some directors, putting in a phone call to his friend Dermot Desmond, or just saying, sorry, lads, I underestimated the size of this job. But Martin O'Neill, a great manager, but he does a lot of Q&A sessions. And people that do a lot of Q&A sessions are usually quite keen for readies. So I don't think Martin O'Neill's going to walk away from a salary from now to the end of the season. But hopefully he's putting as much pressure on Dermot Desmond as possible to get Nicholson or whoever to do a job. But Nicholson's one only achievement, like Peter, is keeping Celtic from liquidation.
He should flip it to Dermot and give him 10 minutes to find him a striker, because apparently he only gave him 10 minutes to take the job. That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, but the simple fact is, Boise, if you have to sort of look at it from the point of view that if Martin O'Neill is first on Dermot Desmond's contacts list as the man who's going to pull Celtic out of a hole every time Celtic goes into a hole, it's clear that he has far more respect for Martin O'Neill than he ever had for Brendan Rodgers.
Correct.
So, True. You know, if he contacts Dermot Desmond and says to Dermot Desmond, look, I'm sorry, Dermot, these guys are not giving me the requirements that I need to take this squad forward, so I'm going to have to respectfully decline the job and I'm going to have to move on unless this happens. Is Dermot Desmond then going to bang heads and say, get your fucking shit together, guys, and get him the players that he wants? And, you know, it's like our mate Liam just sent in a joke there. He said, rumours that the Stephen Welsh deal has fallen through. Celtic couldn't agree terms with themselves. That pretty much sums it up, guys, doesn't it? You know, it's there's nothing sounds ridiculous in this day and age anymore with Celtic. Nothing that Celtic does it's just not, like, no matter how idiosyncratic it gets, it's just not ridiculous anymore. It's just you expect it. You expect absolute bollocks at the moment. And it's the more you hear every day, like, the less shocking it becomes. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, it beggars belief what's going on at the moment. And yet, and this is, I'm moving on to our next subject, which is Michael Nicholson himself. And the question that I'm going to put to James first, okay, is where's the line, James? Where's the point of no return for Michael Nicholson? Because as far as I'm concerned, he has gone fucking miles beyond the point of no return now. But where is that particular, like, point of no return where he crosses the line and he has to be fucking hounded out of Celtic? And in my view, and I'll get your opinion, my view is if he fucks this transfer window up, he has to just, you know, the boy Celtic got it spot on with that banner on Saturday, you know, own your fuck-ups and resign. But where's the line, James? I mean, he's crossed the line so many times now. What is it going to be that ultimately finishes this guy?
Well, I mean, I'm going to come back to what you guys were saying earlier on about Michael Nicholson and how does he look in the mirror. Michael Nicholson is so anonymous. If Michael Nicholson looked in the mirror, he wouldn't even see Michael Nicholson. I don't know where the point of no return for this guy is. The spot that he offered his resignation. But when? After Nancy was told that he was leaving, simultaneously you also hear that Nicholson was the guy who phoned Desmond and demanded that he was removed. And that's so obviously a piece of PR from inside the club that it's, again, that's one of the ones that just insults your intelligence to hear it. Nicholson's quite possibly the worst hire in the history of our club. Quite possibly. I don't know what he does as part of his job. I don't know what he thinks the CEO job involves. As you say, as somebody said, not even the biggest board apologist can make a case for why this guy's still in his position. The idea that Celtic could not go tomorrow and find a better CEO is nonsensical. I mean, I'm going to take up something that, and I don't want to turn this into a rant against the Celtic Supporters Limited, but they had about to go at the collective the other day, and Duncan Smiley has sort of poo-pooed the idea that removing this board of directors will do any good. Well, if you were to remove Michael Nicholson from that job tomorrow and give it to a guy who ran a newspaper stand on George Square, you would get a better performance. So I'm not convinced that removing these people will have no functional benefit. I think that you could remove Michael Nicholson and get a functional benefit with just about anybody else in post. And the only conceivable reason for turning that man's resignation offer down is that you plan to sack him for cause somewhere down the line. Otherwise, there is no point. Because nobody at this club in recent history has been so obviously and completely and catastrophically out of their depth than he is.
It's a fact. Yep. Boise, I mean, what, as I said, what's the line? What's, do you think if he doesn't deliver in this transfer window, he has to fall on his sword?
I think he already does have to fall on his sword. He's not going to. This is the reality. This is why things like the collective are so important, because you need to keep shining the light. You need to, as I've said for 4 or 5 years now, keep your eyes on the board at all times. You need to keep highlighting it. You need to keep flagging it. You need to keep doing podcasts like this where it's getting discussed. You're ridiculing how poor his efforts are in the job, or his lack of effort are in the job. These things all need to highlight when it comes to a climax that someone else makes the decision for him. He is not going to fall on his sword. He has to be removed from his position. The only way for that is constant pressure, constant highlighting, and him continuing to make a rip-roaring arse of the task that he is meant to be in charge of. Joe says he's only there in name, which I'm intrigued by, because I don't know who is meant to be doing the job if he's not. I don't think any of them know what their roles are. They all played musical chairs with the roles, remember, when the big disappearance of Lawwell 1.0 happened. It was all nonsense then. They played musical chairs. They then came back in the January with buy one Lawwell, get one free. And Mark Lawwell arrived at the scene. They all played musical chairs with their job titles. Nothing changed because none of them actually do their jobs. But I don't see any of them, Eric, to be totally honest with you, mate, falling on their sword. The only thing I can see is continually harassing, continually highlighting how bad the job is, obviously sticking within the law and stuff like that, and I get all that. But you've got to be vocal at these games as well. And if people think that's out of order, they're crazy. What other opportunity are you going to get 60,000 Celtic fans in this, or 50,000 as it is right now? What a chance have you got of getting them all together at any other point in time but during a match? That is the easiest time to get them all together and have their voices at the very loudest. These things all need to carry on. And then it's great when you've got large audiences on podcasts like this where it can actually be broken down for those maybe sitting on the fence a wee bit with what these guys' abilities are in the role. You can break it down systematically as to how poor, and that is the only system we'll see, James, is we can actually break it down systematically how out their depth they are and hopefully get more people on board to then use their voice at the next congregation, which would be the next home match.
Yeah, and like, that's a very good point, Boise, because like, what better opportunity do we have when we have 55,000 fans, you know, aside from away fans at a stadium? But I mean, we don't even hold that many away fans. We had 2,500 Ibrox fans there for the game against them. And the fact of the matter, that was probably the only game where the fans got really vociferous and lost their shit altogether. And the main stand, which is usually very quiet, was the one stand that started really losing its shit and firing abuse at the board. But it shouldn't be just a game against the likes of the Ibrox side. It should be in every game that we're actually harassing these guys and calling them out. Like, I know the rage decibels are going to go a hell of a lot higher at a game against the Ibrox side. And especially if we're losing on our home turf against them and losing in the way that we did lose against them, that's going to just drive everybody's rage through the roof. But we can't just pick and choose when we're going to lose the plot with them. If we want them gone, like, to me, the atmosphere was all too quiet at the game on Saturday. You know, obviously there was a good roar when we got the first goal, and then it was kind of the usual that it was expected after that. And I remember I was going through X after the game there, the Reed Celtic X, and I saw somebody posted up the 1996 Scottish Cup quarterfinal, I think, against Dundee United. And we were 1-0 down going into injury time, and I just watched the highlights of that game. And Pierre van Heijden got the first goal to equalise just going into injury time. And in the third minute of injury time, Andreas Thom scored the winner. And I never heard such a fucking roar.
Mm-hmm.
The roof was lifted off Celtic Park when that winner was scored against Dundee United in a cup game.
Remember it.
30 years ago. Right? And then you have Dundee United today, and it's sedate, it's quiet, it's dependent on the Green Brigade, because the Green Brigade gets the atmosphere going. And they're kind of like the conductors directing the orchestra, you know. But we're just not getting vocal enough. And that anger has to be channeled. It has to be channeled correctly. And I'll move to you now, Joe. Obviously, you need to have your say in Michael Nicholson as well. What is it going to take? Like,
on that atmosphere question, probably half the folk that were at that game in 95 were at the game on Saturday, 30 years on. So yeah, they're all a little bit older. I don't know the stats, but the Celtic support is fairly old. I mind seeing a Turkish Champions League game last season or season before. They were playing Man United, and it was mad. It was all young guys in their 20s and 30s shouting and bawling all their way through it. And at Celtic Park, it's another of those things. It's a fairly old support now, and they've not quite got the same fire. But in terms of Nicholson, Nicholson's an ex-Fall guy. Whenever Dermot Desmond, whenever the hassle, abuse, anger gets to a certain level, then Nicholson will be served up. But it's down to that. Clearly, he's not going to walk away. He'll have a good deal sorted out for himself. One of the things on Lille was people says you shouldn't have a CEO. A CEO should be in place for 5 to 8 years. Well, come September time, Nicholson will be in place for 5 years. But 5 years of absolute nothing. It's great. The only two interviews he's ever given to Celtic, the only two interviews he's given one-to-one, were both to Celtic TV and both to defend Wilfred Nancy. So that sums up his leadership and his judgment and many other things. But he'll be here until Dermot Desmond says, time up. No idea who replaces him, but like the manager, they're not going to get a competent manager to come into the current setup at Celtic. You're not going to get a competent CEO to come into the current setup at Celtic. My dad had this wish that last week when Mark Lanier came back. The one guy that we really need to come back is Dom Mackay. So we know Celtic like to bring folk back, but I suspect Dom Mackay is the last guy that's going to be brought back. So dream on, Dad. But Nicholson will be there until Dermot Desmond says, time up, Mikey. You've been a great lad. They'd probably demote him and put him back to his old role rather than get rid of him.
Oh, definitely.
Lingering around the building. Early in the season, folk are telling you tales that, don't worry, Nicholson's got a job lined up at UEFA. He's not going to be there. I'll tell you, Lowell's going to step down at the AGM. Well, he never stepped down at the AGM. He stepped down after the AGM. So these guys just keep on floating around like things in the toilet where they can't flush it properly. So we're stuck with them all for a while to come. But maybe one day Dermot will get fed up with the fairways and decide, let's get something sorted at Celtic. Get rid of these clowns that have given me a little bit of angst. And revolutionary stuff. Get in a competent CEO to be the CEO. Bring in a manager that knows the stuff and get a director of football that's done the job before. It's got connections and isn't as toxic as Michael Nicholson. But dream on.
But, and we'll finish up on the Nicholson subject now after this. I mean, if you were to look at this time a year ago, right, when they were gearing up to sell Kyogo Furuhashi, right, and how much the club has lost in that space of time, in a year, under Nicholson's, you know, stewardship, right? We lost Brendan Rodgers. We lost qualification for the Champions League and the finance that comes with that. Anywhere between 40 and 50 million, if you add gate receipts into it. 20 million of that offset through the Europa League and whatever we might get out of that at a push, right? So we said that's 30 million. You then have whatever payoff there was for Brendan Rodgers, if there was one. You then have whatever payoff there was for Nancy. You then have the revenue that's lost from the Not Another Penny campaign. And, there has been a drop in attendances at the games. Maybe not massive, maybe 5,000-6,000, but it still all counts. So if you were to sum up in a year financially how much the club has lost under this guy, you surely got to ask the question then, like, is Dermot Desmond not looking at the club hemorrhaging money and saying, this is the guy who's in charge of the club at the moment. This is the guy that I have in place. And he's losing me a fucking fortune. Because when it comes to my dividend at the end of the season, it's going to be way down. Because, like, one of the commenters made a point there earlier on and said that this is probably going to be one of the lowest turnover years for Celtic because of everything that is actually happening. So, leaving this guy in charge of the club is just damaging it further and further, because the fans aren't going to back off. They're not going to pull back and say, we're not, you know, they're going to keep saying we're not attending games. There is eventually going to be a boycott if this guy remains in situ, especially if there is the transfer window ends up being a disaster, which is looking more and more likely that it will. There's going to be a boycott. That, again, is going to, the financial impact of that's going to be huge. So Michael Nicholson, keeping Michael Nicholson in place is now fundamentally damaging Celtic. And how Dermot Desmond can't see that is beyond me. Like, this guy is a billionaire. He didn't get to be a billionaire out of being nice to people. So why is he being nice to fucking Michael Nicholson? Why is he paying this guy 800 grand a year to drive Glasgow Celtic into the fucking ground? Because that's what he's doing. And there's no other way.
He wouldn't have any other business to run like this.
Yeah. So why is he doing it to Celtic?
To operate this way.
You know, so I don't get it. I mean,
I don't think he's present enough with it all, to be honest with you. I think he just gets messages back to him. I don't think he's all over this at all, to be honest with you. I think all the ins and outs that we discuss, I don't think you could have a conversation with Dermot Desmond and he'd be fine-tuned on all subject matter Celtic whatsoever. And I think all he does get is messages back from the likes of Nicholson and people he's decided to put trust in. And that's where it is, that they'll be telling him sweet nothings in his ear. So the cows come home, they'll be saying, oh, it was big bad Brendan, and then he's went absolute nuclear on it, knowing about a tenth of a story. That's that. I don't think he's all over all of this stuff, Eric, is what you would like, and that's maybe why Nicholson gets away with the absolute shit show that he runs so far. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, he's an astute businessman. He can't be that disconnected. You know, he's the absentee landlord. He's either in Dublin or he's in a fucking golf course in Barbados or whatever he's doing. You know, but he can't. He has to know. I mean, everybody says that he pulls the strings and he makes all the calls and that Michael Nicholson doesn't do anything without going through him and so on and so forth. So, I don't know. It's just...
I can't think of any other explanation, Eric. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a bizarre situation. It's a bizarre situation. You know? And, like, the club, at this moment, under Nicholson, is hemorrhaging money. And it will continue to hemorrhage money. Because the Not Another Penny campaign is going to hurt Celtic, and fans are not going to, the collective is not going to back off until such time as he's gone. So it's a cash 22. It's a no-win situation.
It's a lot worse than that. Nicholson's inflicted at least short-term structural damage on Celtic, probably medium-term, in terms of reputation and everything else as well. We deal with other clubs, ranked in Europe, with how other clubs see us as a professional organisation. He has inflicted serious damage on us. And the summer was catastrophic for Celtic reputation. Like, well, this guy and other people are on the board of directors. The idea that we would stab in the back a successful manager on his way out the door is appalling. And no one in Europe is going to forget that we did that. We then compound it by sacking Nancy after 8 games.
Yeah.
We're going to throw O'Neill to the Wolves if we don't bring in some players in the summer. And his reputation is going to take an absolute beating on the back of it. This makes it incredibly hard to go and find a new manager. It makes it incredibly difficult to go and pursue a top-class candidate ever again while this guy's in the
great point.
In any sort of executive role. And I don't think that... I mean, look... There is one website, okay, which we all know which one is, which thinks that Celtic has only made 3 mistakes in the last 10 years, which was 2 bad managerial hires, of which Brendan, 11 trophies, Rodgers is 1, and 1 bad CEO. And the bad CEO is not even Michael Nicholson. So, tells you how engaged reality they are earlier. But
wow.
Nicholson's inflicted serious damage on us, and he set us back he's quite possibly set us back 10 years in terms of reputation building. We're going to have to repair a lot of damage. Whether this guy stays for another 5 years or leaves right now, he has already done a tremendous amount of damage we're going to have to repair, and it will take us a while to do it.
Yeah, and it's like that whole scenario with Kyogo Furuhashi and the fact that he was so gutless that he bypassed Birmingham and went straight to Kyogo Furuhashi. And led Furuhashi on to believe that things had been agreed with the club as well.
If that story's true, mate, any competent organization should just terminate him right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, if you look and read the comments from Chris Davies, Chris Davies says, we have had no communication.
It does sound pissed off.
But it's the wording. It's the wording he uses in it. He distinctly says, we have had no communication. As in, we, Birmingham, have had no communication. We have told the player to focus on delivering here. Furuhashi goes out and scores on Saturday. You know? So, yeah, it's just...
Nah, that just frustrates the life out of me. That I think that's so snide in one aspect, so cowardly in another. And when James is talking about the reputational damage to get another manager, and you're talking about reputational damage in the transfer market as well, because believe you me, these sporting directors and chief execs, they all talk to each other. They all talk. Football's not like this crazy, like, massive out there universe where, you know, Celtic can just go under the radar and do these sort of things without it becoming spoke about between guys in similar roles at all sorts of clubs. And it'll be you dealt with that Nicholson at Celtic, by the way. Have you dealt with him? Oh, he's an absolute shambles. He's got them running like these calls happen. Like, it's just conversational. And you could do yourself a hell of a lot of damage.
It's a tight knit community. Yeah, you're 100% right. These guys, they all talk.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously Nicholson now has a reputation for being shambolic. And clubs don't want to deal with him. And people clearly don't want to probably deal with Celtic either. But then there's another facet to this, in that I would nearly fucking bet that Nicholson is bouncing around at the moment trying to get a buyer for Daisa Maeda before he
There are three examples that are absolutely terrifying, right? There's the Maeda example for the summer, there's the Yang example for the summer, and there's the Stephen Welsh example for right now, right? And they're all about the same thing. They're all about how... See, I've always lamented this policy that we have of whenever a player reaches a certain level, we're looking to sell them as quickly as we can to bank the maximum amount of profit for them, right? I've always lamented that we behave this way. And the club has always framed it as, but we give a player an opportunity, he comes here, he serves as well, and then we let him go when he wants to go and take the next stage of his career, right? I don't agree with it, but I understand the fundamental logic behind it. And over the course of the summer, we tore that logic to shreds. Our inability to go and sign players denied Maeda the move that he wanted and he thought he was on the brink of. We pulled the plug on Yang's deal at the last minute. And now, just days after Stephen Welsh is telling everybody that he's happy at Motherwell and he's happy to stay at Motherwell, we've pulled him back as well. And we've ruined it for him to come back and what? Sit on the bench at Celtic if everybody's fit. The fact is that players and agents no longer will trust these people. And that's incredibly damaging. I mean, and that may even explain some of what we're doing right now, fumbling about in the transfer market, trying to get people to answer the phone. We've done serious damage to ourselves.
I think as well, you totally look at, there's a few different quotes, if you remember. I think there was the striker, his name's escaping me. Anyway, I think he was Bosnian. I think he's went to the championship. I can't remember. We linked them a few times. But there was Strelic, that's it. And he'd sort of said the way Celtic went about it was bizarre because he'd spoke to them and it all looked good. And then they went in with a total shortchange offer to his club. You had Legia Warsaw came out and they commented, their chairman saying Celtic's transfer dealings were utterly bizarre with them. And the whole way they went about it was they spoke to a football guy, you know, at the club or who was meant to be, and then they were left dealing with our transfer, you know, the transfer negotiations with, which is likely to be Nicholson. And you also had, if you remember, the comments that came out about a year ago by Lee Congerton, the much famed Lee Congerton who was at Celtic and actually gave you some names. I gave you players that he had recommended to the Celtic hierarchy that were followed up with offers that he couldn't get his head around and said he found Celtic's approach to these deals utterly bizarre and never actually followed through on his recommendations. He, of course, has went on to have a not too bad career when you actually look at the clubs he's ended up at. Atalanta was the last one I've seen and they weren't doing too bad at the time. I think when you look at these sources here, no one's got an axe to grind against Celtic. No one's trying to criticise Celtic for, you know, the Scottish MSM's benefit or any of this carry on. This is a striker. I think he's Bosnian, Strelec. You've got a Polish league chairman saying something. And then you've got the former head of recruitment at Celtic and Lee Congerton coming out and sort of do it. And the theme seems to be how we go about business is strange. That seems to be the theory, not a big, a huge...
Go ahead, Eagles chairman as well, as you say, Naiacs to Greg.
There's another one. Yeah,
very easy.
Brilliant example.
Club across the city, but Celtic were an absolute nightmare to the extent where he actually criticised us for it.
That's right. Sorry, there's another one. So they're really good sources for us to be looking at, if I'm honest, if you want to see how we're actually performing. And by the way, again, when they're saying that to the media, it means they've said it to several other chairmen they've not spoke to, then read it in the media, and we become persona non grata when it comes to the transfer market. Hence why we're back with Dudu Dahan as being our sort of linchpin in this window. It's embarrassing.
In the last fortnight, in the last fortnight, we have had a MLS defender sit in the stand, presumably to get a deal done, and then no bothered with it once the manager was gone. We had the midfielder from Sparta Prague, which was all but signed and sealed until we decided to drag our feet. And their club promptly then sold another one of their midfielders and who can't and won't sell him is. We had to deal for the Ivorian collapse yesterday, and he's not going to go and sign for an English Premier League team because I don't know what we decided today there. I don't know what the delay was, what the problem was, what the issue was. Some people have said it was a medical issue. Other people have suggested that they just don't like, as you said, Eric, they just don't like the optics and they just don't want to have to deal with it. Whatever the situation is, but that's three potential deals that were in progress that collapsed in the last week. And we just look utterly amateurish. It's just a fucking mess. No, I've never seen anything like this.
I think at this point in time, Martin O'Neill should just pick up the phone to Dermot Desmond and say, listen, Dermot, let me fucking get the players that I want in. Just let me do it. Because these guys can't.
It could not go much worse.
Yeah. So, look, we could dwell. Joe, do you want to make a point on all this? You've kind of been quiet there. So,
very quick point. Shout out to Paul Larkin for the Kyogo Birmingham story. That was on Paul Larkin's Substack. Very, very believable. Paul Larkin does his homework. He's not seeking attention or clicks, but the detail in that story all added up. So, well played, Paul Larkin.
Yeah. An absolutely exceptional piece of work.
Yeah, fair dues.
100%. And look, we could talk about this all night long. And we all know that it's just not going to change until these guys are gone. That's the only way that this is ever going to change. So we have to hope that what happens in the coming weeks and months forces the change that we require to happen. So we'll move on to the one small topic. And Joe, you highlighted it today before we give predictions for Wednesday night. You highlighted it today, so I'll let you take the lead on this one. Keith Jackson's bullshit story about Jota and the attack that he made on Jota. Was that out of line or what?
It was well out of line, but entirely as we can expect from Celtic. And Keith Jackson did not pull that out of thin air. Somebody whispered that in Keith Jackson's ear. I picked it up this morning, reading through his column. I knocked out a few stories, and then I was looking through, and this just jumped out at you. So it was all pretty predictable. You're fast reading, you're scrolling through, and then there's this attack on Jota, who apparently is not bothering his backside. He's in no rush to start justifying his wages. It's shameful, but again, I'll bring it straight back to Celtic. Tomorrow, that story was in the Daily Record today. I found out later on, Jackson was talking about that yesterday on the Daily Record podcast. So he was discussing that live on air on Sunday night. He put it in print on for Monday's edition. And Tuesday, tomorrow, Celtic will welcome the Daily Record to Celtic Park. They'll be given access to Martin O'Neill. They'll be given access to a player. Myself, I'm an admirer of Boycie, the way he calls out Celtic fan media. I have absolutely zero interest in ever attending Celtic media presser. No chance, no interest whatsoever. But there are podcasts, there are websites that think it's a good thing for them to be in Celtic in Celtic media conferences. But the Daily Record will be there tomorrow. So the Daily Record allowed Keith Jackson to make those accusations about Jota on Sunday night. They allowed them to, they published it on in Monday's paper, and on Tuesday, Celtic will be welcoming them into Celtic Park. Have a word with Martin O'Neill. Here's a story for you. Keep it back to 10:30 to help your publication. So it's very nasty of Keith Jackson, but the story goes a bit deeper because someone at Celtic is quite comfortable with that message getting out that Jota's having a laugh. Jota's on holiday. I read some put a comment. Jota could be sitting in Saudi Arabia with his feet up, watching his contract click down. He could be in France at Rennes watching his contract click down. Instead, he's come back to the cold, dark misery of Scotland. He chose that because he actually wants to play football. Jota likes playing football. He likes the interaction with supporters. He gets a buzz out of all that. He's of the Ronaldo generation. He's a complete professional. He works his hardest. He doesn't go bevying. He doesn't even drink Iron Brew. That was one of those wacky Celtic videos when they tested Iron Brew out in new players. So Jota is 100% professional, and it's utterly shameful that Celtic will be welcoming the Daily Record tomorrow to Celtic Park with no retraction in that story. And that's the same Daily Record that was running the Open Blade story a couple of weeks ago about the knife man or the swordsman at Cannadice. So Keith Jackson's immediate target, but bottom line is Celtic are very comfortable and basically encourage that sort of coverage.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, it's there's a medical team at Celtic, and the medical team makes the calls on whether a player is fit or whether a player is not fit. And it's clear that Jota is going through a recuperation period, and he's following the guidance of the medics. And the medics are telling him and telling the management team what the timeline is for his return. It's not like with an injury like he had, it's not like you can arse around and doss around and just, you know, like sit in your backside and take a wage. And for somebody at Celtic Football Club to actually put that out there and to pass that message to Keith Jackson, it's very disingenuous to say something like that about a player, especially from the point that you made there, Joe. You know, he could be sitting taking 10 million a year over in Saudi Arabia, whether he was getting a game or not. He could be in France taking a wage there and, you know, just cruising there as well. If that's the kind of guy that he was, a guy who just cruises and wants to take a wage. But to say, like, he made the choice to come back to Celtic, and to say that he made that choice to come back to sit in his ass after a horrendous injury, it's chronic, to be honest. And the optics of it are really shit. And like you said, the Record will be at the club again tomorrow for the press conference. And again, that just flies in the face of, you know, everything that we should be doing as a club. People, you know, people are journalists like Keith Jackson, Hugh Keevans, and all the rest of them who literally take pot shots at Celtic all the time should not be welcome at Celtic Park. So yeah, it's disgraceful behaviour, whoever put that out there, as far as I'm concerned. And it needs calling out, and that's why I highlighted it, because it stood out to me when you put your piece up on it today, Joe. So look, guys, we'll move on finally. We've gone well over time today, but there was an awful lot to discuss.
Can I pop in on that one for a second, mate?
You can. So, you can.
Thank you, McBrief. Way back when I was still listening to Graham Spears' podcast before he allowed himself to be used as the Celtic Bulls bitch to attack Brendan Rodgers, I heard a comment on there that stuck with me ever since. And it goes to show that no, all this is about strategic leaking, but it's just about the shocking indiscipline of the people that inhabit our director's box. And it was when they were openly criticising Rodgers in front of the media over his use of his signings, right? And I remember thinking, that must be one of the most unprofessional things I've ever heard of. They're sitting right there where they know the hacks are, and they're bitching at the manager for how the manager is utilising the squad in front of the media, and they don't give a shit that somebody might go and write that story. They have no interest in protecting the club or protecting the manager or protecting the stability of Celtic. They're just running their mouths off without thinking about it, possibly, without having any concern about the consequences. And this doesn't necessarily have to be a strategic leak. This could just be somebody at Celtic Park, somebody who works in the power structure at Celtic Park, thinking that's a cool thing to be passing around during a club event or whatever, standing about in the club lounge after a game, And Mike just think that that's an appropriate thing to be discussing. So it doesn't even have to be a strategic leak. There's no discipline at our club. There is no, nobody at our club thinks about the, nobody in the hierarchy of our club thinks about the bigger picture or thinks about the consequences for selling. It opening their mouths and just talking out of class. It's an appalling situation. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't do anything to improve the reputation of our club. If a player is reading that this morning and thinks that that came from inside Celtic Park, and he goes back to his agent and he tells his agent, get me the fuck out of here as quick as possible. There's people inside the club briefing against me. I mean, they've not even thought of that. We're in a shocking place because of these people. And it doesn't matter whether it's discipline or whether it's deliberate sabotage. The result is the same. We're in a bad spot.
Yeah. Boise, I'll finish with you on that one. I'll put a question to you. Do you feel that we have surpassed the 90s and the early 90s and 94 at this point in time? Do you think things have hit an all-time low at Celtic in the 21st century?
Well, the question I often ask is, on the bus I've asked many a time, is why is it we support Celtic now? And it's legacy reasons, really. You mean you can't be on board possibly with the board. You're disengaged now with a lot of the playing staff, to be honest with you. Until Martin came back, you weren't really sure of the coaching staff under Wilfred Nonsa. And there's a lot of things that put you off right now, which I think is a toxic thing for Celtic as well. The one thing that they've stopped giving you is belief in sort of magical things happening, which I think Celtic are always associated with, just got that bit of magic about them as a football club. They've removed all that. They've completely removed all that, the board. And I find it now harder to be as emotionally invested as I was, but I suppose it's all I've got as well at the same time, because when I look at it logically right now, I detest so much about, you know, how Celtic are being run, what they stand for, whether it be their political sort of things that they want to influence in some hands and then not in others. Their contradictions with that stuff really frustrates me. How they operate as a, you know, be treating you and condescending you, I find really tough to take, because I'm not an idiot. I wasn't born an idiot, and I'm not going to be treated like one by people who I do actually happen to think are idiots. That's just icing on the cake with that. Is it worse than the 90s? Well, we could have lost the club altogether, and I think that brings up a completely different dilemma. So I suppose that would always be the epitome of it. I think this one is a self-inflicted disaster, and that's hard to part, albeit you could argue it was self-inflicted in the 90s as well, I suppose.
But one point, Boise, and we made this point earlier.
Yes, sorry.
A couple of shows ago. Just a quick one. I'm not going to cut across you for too long.
No, you're cool.
We expected that board to fuck up because that board was so deeply in debt and so, you know, short on funds, and Celtic Park was falling down. Everybody back in the 90s expected a fuck up was coming. This board has no excuses because we have the finance. We've always had the finance. They have no excuse to be in this position.
Yeah, there is no excuse whatsoever for it. And whilst they do it, they as I say, they condescend you, they patronise you, they tell you lies, they tell you spin, they treat you like a second-class citizen. They treat you like someone with an IQ as low as you could imagine. And I find the whole thing quite unpalatable with this current regime in charge. I suppose you can only live in the here and now. I think in terms of Celtic in 2025, where we are, this is as bad as it could get. I would say that right now, considering the advantages that we have.
Have we hit rock bottom yet?
I don't think there's lower we can go right now in terms of what we've got, in terms of the advantages. In terms of the advantages we've held, by the way, for the last two decades, have been such that a lot of the league titles they've won, they'd have been utterly, it'd have been bizarre for us not to have won, yet they pat themselves on the back for them. When it comes to qualifying for the Champions League, well, you do that through default for winning the league the times we qualify for it. Yeah. And the years that we haven't is because there's been qualifiers present, they've not known what to do. So I think the way I look at Celtic right now is, we are in an amazing position and have been for two decades. So this is as bad as it could get with those advantages.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. Look, guys, we'll go on to our last point, which is a quick one. We have John McGlynn's Falkirk on Wednesday night. So I'll go to Joe first. Joe, how do you think we're going to fare up at the Falkirk Stadium on a plastic pitch against a team which is not easy to beat at the moment. They're playing quite well. And John McGlynn always plays decent football. How do you think we're going to fare there on Wednesday night?
I usually wash my hands at this and say no idea what the hell's going on. But I think we'll scrape a 2-1 victory. It won't be particularly pretty, but we need to keep a win. But as much interest will be before and after what Martin O'Neill's saying when he goes through another match without a striker being added and no signs of activity, no signs of interest from the club and improving the first team squad. Well, the two other sides in contention for the league are doing everything possible. So a 2-1 victory, and that'll put things on hold for Pencastle. We've got Auchinleck Talbot on Sunday. I think we might win 2 or 3 nothing, maybe a 4-0, but I suspect it'll be a weakened squad put in that match, playing in plastic, and there's bigger matches coming up. So 2-1 away win Wednesday night for me.
How about you, James?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. I think we'll win on Wednesday. I think we'll win at the weekend. But as Joe says, the interesting thing is going to be how well O'Neill thinks we're prepared for Bologna and Tynecastle. And I think O'Neill sounds already like a man who is feeling immense frustration. Even when he made his appearance on the club's in-house channel one night, he couldn't contain his frustration. And he's angered at having to call back Stephen Welsh because nothing's been done.
Yeah.
I think O'Neill is at the point now already where he is starting to worry that he's not going to get supported. And, I mean, when I was coming up with a name for the podcast tonight, I called it the O'Neill Collective because O'Neill isn't just here to fix this season. O'Neill lost his last title tilt as Celtic boss by 5 points, I think it was. And the reason for that is that Larson had left the year before and we'd replaced him with a loney Henry Kamara, if I'm right. We had a squad that was aging and O'Neill was fighting hard to keep it together because he knew that we were only going to replace like we like. We were never going to go out and buy another John Hartson. We were never going to go and buy another Chris Sutton. There wasn't going to be another Alan Thompson or Neil Lennon. And he held it together a year longer than he probably should have because the signs of it creaking were very obvious. And I think there is a party new that would like to correct the record. And he must be pretty pissed off right now that he doesn't see any sign that the people at the club who essentially called him and says, please come and bail us out, aren't they going to give him the proper tools to do it? I'd be surprised if he wasn't pretty pissed.
Yeah. Okay. And you, YC, how do you think we're going to fare against Falkirk and then Auchinleck on the weekend?
1-0, I think, midweek. I think it'll be one of those ones where you're just happy to get hear the final whistle. Against Auchinleck, who knows? Let's say 3-0, something like that. But I think the forefront of my mind is definitely Wednesday. I think that'll be one of those single-goal wins for us. Single goal away from him, but I do back us to get another clean sheet under Martin. I think he's going to be underlining how important it was. I think if we'd conceded in that game against Dundee United, I think he'd have been very different in the press conference, albeit we'd have won 4-1. I think he would have honed in on that aspect of it. So I think he would have took extra delight in that performance that we got the clean sheet and be reaffirming how important that is, because if you can keep a clean sheet, you've got far better chance of getting a win. Simple as that. And Martin O'Neill is all about keeping it simple right now. So I think 1-0 because we've not got the goals to do more. But as you say, the box office comes, whatever the result, particularly if we don't win, I think the it'll be box office how O'Neill reacts and what you see the social media and the fans at the game, the implosion that will occur, because it will all go back to the no striker thing. I think we'll be at the forefront of everyone's mind if we don't get the result we need. So let's hope we do get it, because we actually do want to win this league title. So to do that, we have to win this football match on Wednesday. I do think we'll scrape a 1-0 win. It might not be pretty at all times, but we'll get the 3 points.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you there. I think it'll be tight. It could be 1-0 or 2-1, but there will only be a goal in it. And I still think that just if it is a one-goal win, that will still drive home the need for a striker and keep that pressure on.
Yep.
And what I, like, I suppose Auchinleck is probably not going to be a potential banana skin like Macclesfield and Crystal Palace, you know, which was a huge upset there at the weekend. I don't see us collapsing like Crystal Palace collapsed against a six-tier side, which was fascinating watching, to be fair. I did watch that game and it was a fascinating watch, which, you know, really does celebrate the glory of the cup. And, you know, it's still,
it really does.
Yeah, it's still alive and kicking. It was a great result to see. But, yeah, I would. It'll be a tight one, I think. John McGlynn is a tough, especially at home, they're tough to play against. So, yeah, that's it for this evening, guys. It's been a long show. It's been 90 minutes. I think we needed it. And thanks again for joining us, Boisey. Your contribution is always very good.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man.
And, yeah, and to our audience, we've had nearly 500 on the live stream tonight, which is very strong. A lot of people interested in what's going on at the club. They will find the truth here always. We never sugarcoat it here. We never bullshit. We tell it like it is. And if you like what we do, like and subscribe. Keep those subscriptions coming in. And always afterwards, if you're following it on YouTube afterwards, drop a comment into the comment section just to let us know what you think. We're up to the 2,240, I think, now on the subscriptions. So in a year, we've done pretty well. We're pretty happy with the progress. And that pretty much that wraps up tonight. So once again, guys, thanks a million. And hopefully we'll be celebrating two wins come next Monday night. And thanks again, boys, for joining us. We'll all touch base again this time next week, okay?